A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has become tasteless, what can make it salty again? It is good for nothing and can only be thrown out to be trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hilltop cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp to put it under a tub. They put it on the lampstand, where it shines for everyone in the house. In the same way, your light must shine in the sight of men, so that seeing your good works, they may give the praise to your Father in heaven." This is the Gospel of the Lord. "You're worth your weight in gold." It's a common expression we use today, but years ago, it used to be "you're worth your weight in salt." The importance of salt to early generations is largely lost today, but we're used to describing good people as the salt of the earth, a phrase which comes from the very gospel that we've just heard. Salt was a very important commodity in Jesus' time, and actually for centuries after it too, absolutely vital for so much of life. In fact, I read that it was so important that some of the soldiers' wages were given salt as part of their wages, because of course it was so good for them. Of course, today with fridges and freezers and processed food, we're told, of course, we have too much of it. But then for centuries, enough was what kept them going. So when Jesus is using the word salt, what's he saying? I think a few things. One is, first of all, it doesn't exist for itself, its own sake. You don't sit down to have a sort of meal of salt, do you? You know, like, "I'm having salt for breakfast today," or "salt for my tea." You don't. You actually use it to flavor what you are actually having. It's a seasoning. But it also preserves and heals. So I'm still old-fashioned enough, as you know, to gargle with salt if my throat's bad. Or if you cut your finger, if you rub salt in the wound, it'll sting, but it preserves it. And sometimes it's often the only thing. Lots of all these other things, a bit of salt doesn't do you any harm. Quite a bit of good. But that stinging, I'll come back to. But he also reminds us that if we leave it out or it goes damp, very Cornish, then it's of no use and all it's good for is to be slung away. Well, I think when he's speaking about salt in that way, Jesus is using all those different uses, as it were, the different qualities that it's got. He's got that in mind. And he's saying to you, first of all, you don't exist just for your own good. "Here am I, how good I am." You don't exist for your own good. We exist for others. We exist to flavor and season life around us. We're saved by Jesus, not just for our own sake, he's saying, but we're there as tools of assistance so that we can bring his flavor into life. Because when he spoke in St. John's Gospel about he's come to give life and life in its fullness, life as it's meant to be lived, he meant that we as his followers are meant to flavor that life, give it sort of that extra kick, as it were, that's not there. Now the tragedy is that these days so often people see the Christian faith and Catholicism in particular as that which is life denying and not life enhancing and life enriching. And whenever we look at the teaching of the church, all coming from the Lord, we can often find bits and pieces of them so difficult. And it's so easy for the outside world, the secular world, actually to just poke fun and say they're not life-giving, they don't flavor life. Actually, we do almost the opposite. And that can seem to be the case. It's something I think we've always got to be working on, not just us, obviously the bishops, the Pope, all of us, but all together, that actually what Jesus is saying is, you should be able to flavor life. You should actually be able to make it better for people, bring out some of the qualities. If we don't, we need to look why. But some of it is, of course, and that may be coming to the stinging bit, that part of what the Lord is saying elsewhere in the gospel is, if you wish to be a follower of mine, you've got to cross yourself out and come with me. And that appears not to be life-giving, because we want to do our own way, and what I want to do, and it's right for me, I want to be able to do it. And so that's the way the world argues, and of course it can seem that we're saying the opposite. We're not, but we are following the Lord. And the sting, always remember, reminding us all the way, every Sunday we hear, the station of the cross, that was the deepest sting, of course, the Lord had. But it's when that little smarting, when you rub that salt in the wound, but it's to stop things going bad, not just flavoring life, but actually stopping that life from going bad. We all know there's an abundance, always ever has been, always ever will be, an abundance of evil, wickedness, badness around us. There are many issues that today's world presents us with that previous generations didn't have, but we're there to try and stop it going bad, preserve it for being good. And that's sometimes when we've got to sift what's going on around us and work on some of the valuable truths that God brings to us so that we can prevent that world going bad. He then goes to speak about light. I'm not going to unpack light much more. Again, light, you don't just sit down with the light on and think, oh, isn't it lovely, and sit there for 3 hours looking at the light. You use it for something. You might get a new light, lovely table lamp or something. Oh, I think that's nice. But you don't spend hours just ogling it. It's just there to light your way. It's not meant to be covered or sort of kept like a precious object. It's there for use. And it's given so that we can see around us, and therefore we can see what there is around us. Because, of course, why are we frightened of the dark? Because so much, it's either fear of the unknown, whatever else may be around, or who's about to attack us, or what wild animals there may be, if you go back to the old images. But it's actually so that we can actually see and go on working and doing things. And again, that's, you see, in the 21st century, of course, and for a while now, we can dispel the darkness at the flick of a switch. But then see what happens when panic sets in, when there's a power cut, and you can't remember where your candles are, and you can't find a match, and all the street lights have got, everything's gone, and it's pitch black. So you see what the Lord's saying. He says, we are light. And one of the challenges always, but today particularly, is living in a secularized society, living our Christian faith visibly. Because society itself would rather that we kept the faith strictly private and nothing to do with them or anybody else. And I think very often we've sort of been a bit the same, partly because of maybe being in the ghetto in the past and, you know, keep it quiet, don't let anybody know. John Paul II said, we don't come to impose our faith, but to propose it as a way of life God wishes us to live. And he wishes us to live that life, that us will be drawn to that light. That, of course, was a theme Pope Benedict picked up when he was particularly here on his visit 2 or 3 times, but especially in Westminster Hall to the politicians, saying the kingdom is here. Its work is taking place. Jesus came to establish that kingdom. Last week he gave us those beautiful attitudes to have to change and flavor life where it is. And it's power and it's operative because the Spirit's within us. So during the week, look at your life, your values, your behavior. What sort of light do we shine to people around us? What flavor do we bring to enrich life. How good as salt or as light are we for the Lord?